But anyway, thank you so much for coming out. By the way, if you don't know, Bill Meyer from KMED and KCMD. And to my left, to your right, is Mr. X, and he's a big part of the show. And as we well know, we've been talking a lot a couple of weeks ago, almost exactly 2 weeks ago today, we were meeting on the carbon cap and trade. And I wanted to say for you in the yellow vest, I left mine at work like I left the other speaker, but you know, it's been that kind of a day, running around like my hair on fire, still there. But it's been one of those situations where that House Bill 2020 comment period a couple of weeks ago in the city of Medford, I just want to say, I want to hand it to you. It was absolutely astounding, outstanding, what the people who showed up here. The people who showed up here. I don't know what the future of that bill will be at this point. Rumor has it, according to Herman Bertschiger's people, that it was going to be gutted and stuffed at some point. It will be totally unrecognizable by the time it ends up coming out again. Who really knows? But the fact is that the hard left was rocked back on its heels. They were not expecting that kind of pushback everywhere, including Southern Oregon. Southern Oregon, I think, really gave it to them. I don't know if you recall the look, and it's not that I want to just pick on Senator Jeff Golden.
Go ahead.
Hey, listen, I like Jeff on some of his other positions. We're not going to talk about that tonight. But he was horrible on cap and trade. You know, we know that. And he looked like he was sucking a lemon the entire day. And he was having to listen to everybody talking about what a foolish thing this was. So the people's voice does count. We're not a pure democracy. We know that. Representative republic. But we do have great pressure. And I know that people are fighting on various other aspects of liberty, vaccine freedom. We heard all about those kind of things. But we're going to set that aside right now because a clear and present danger is your Second Amendment right. And this is, I've never seen a year, I've been doing talk radio in Medford since 2001, 9/11, and I have never, ever seen it like this. I never thought we would get to the point where we would be told 20 rounds a month might be the allowable purchase of ammunition. For a free people, you have the right to keep and bear arms. You just can't put anything in it. It's kind of out there looking at it. And what we're going to do is first things first, I think, Ed, before we start breaking it down constitutionally, we'll do some quick words here from some people that just wanted to give their take on it. I'm going to start with Phil Gramatica. Phil Gramatica is president of the Rogue Valley Shooting Sports Association, training director at the Medford Rifle and Pistol Club, refused to be a victim, personal training, NRA-certified firearms instructor. In other words, he can't fit it all on one card. So, Phil, why don't you come up and give us a word or two.
Thanks, Bill. Just what I wanted to be, first. It worked that out. I sat in the third seat and didn't make that happen.
Oh, well.
So there you go. Okay, as Bill said, we need to be a loud voice. We need to be a loud voice, and what that really means is when other people ask us about it or you about it, come up with the right answers. Okay? The biggest answer we have to send to Salem and so on is no. We're not behind any of these 7 to 9 bills they're trying to pass. And we have a right to our firearms, Second Amendment, absolutely. Okay. And safe practice with firearms takes training. Okay. Quite honestly, most difficult gun you can manage out there is a handgun. On average, through study, you can become a master with 3,000 rounds. Let's see, 20 a month. You know, it just doesn't work, does it? Okay.
Boy, that's a long time to masterhood, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And quite honestly, any of you have listened to me before, you know one thing that I say about what a master and an expert is, simply somebody that's mastered the basics. The first basic with all of our firearms is safety. So it's the second, third, fourth, everything else. There's no such thing as too much safety. We're trying to educate people on safety. And we're trying to educate the politicians that we are safe. We do bring it forward. And let's continue to do that. Is that enough for a minute?
That sounds fine. All right. That sounds fine. Thank you, Bill. Terry Welburn of Welburn's Weapons was going to speak tonight. Unfortunately, he ended up falling a little ill right now, so I'm saying some prayers for our friend Terry at this point. And Mike Quilty, who's a former city councilor from the city of Central Point, and of course also associated with Welburn's, and you do background check, fingerprints, and all that other sort of good stuff. So give us some thoughts there, if you don't mind.
Well, just so you know, I was a Border Patrol agent and immigration officer for 15 years, and I've been retired for... Retired for 20 because I had a bunch of skills sitting in my back. So I've spent a long time walking around with a gun on my hip. It's a very serious commitment people make. And a lot of politicians don't understand when people make the choice to go out and get a concealed carry permit, they are so much less likely to commit a felony than a law enforcement officer is, that it is a difference of orders of magnitude. It isn't even noise in the criminal justice system when you look at it statistically. We've done a lot with Kevin Sterrett with Oregon Firearms Federation this year. We all have to get together. And Kevin sent us a letter. And he says, despite their empty talk of common sense gun legislation, to look at the list of bills. There's over 17 of them that are restrictive. There's 25 or more of them in front of the legislature right now, but 25 of them look to severely restrict your ability to exercise your Second Amendment right. They're looking to disarm you. It's not about a different point of view. It's about the far left seeking the destruction of your constitutional rights. The Constitution was written to bind down government. The left seeks unlimited government, and our constitutional rights stand in the way of their achieving that. You can see it in everything they do. They seek to silence anyone who disagrees with them, and you can see that by looking at what's going on at colleges around the country and right here up in Portland State. There goes the First Amendment, and the Second Amendment protects all the others. Without the others, they don't have any teeth if the Second Amendment isn't there to protect you from government's overreach. What's the answer? Well, victory doesn't go to the majority. Victory goes to the angry, active, organized, relentless minority that simply will not take no for an answer. That's why we're vulnerable now. We tend to stay quiet. Leave us alone, we're good. Well, they aren't leaving us alone, so it's time to make some noise. So how did a collection of mentally ill, gender-fluid wonks come to have power over everything? Are they the majority? Clearly not. But they did learn from Saul Alinsky that by being relentless, outrageous, confrontational, that eventually they can prevail. This is the lesson of history. Most people who share our values won't burn property or assault people with whom they disagree. But we can make our voices heard over and over and over again. Send letters, make phone calls, use the email, send them faxes, and you can use the tool that's on the OFF's website. You don't even have to write. They have emails up there. You can add your little bit to it. You push the button, it goes to every single legislator.
And by the way, if you don't mind me interjecting, it's OregonFirearms.org. If you're not a member already, you don't know about it.
Yeah, and like he says, on his front page, there's a link that will take you to all the current bills and tell you what their status is. The ones that are really negative are in red type, so you can find them really easy. So there's a link on the front page to find it. You can sign up for alerts. All he needs is your email. He'll send it to you. You don't have to give your name. That's optional. He doesn't even ask for any money to do it. But here's the guy that stands up to fight for our rights up in Salem. If you're being concerned about being associated with a pro-gun organization ending up on that list, the state already knows who you are. If you've ever purchased a firearm, bought a hunting license, used a credit card for ammo, accessories, or any remotely related product to firearms, you're on somebody's list someplace. They know who we are. So speaking out isn't going to change your status one bit with these folks. If you're a club member, you're on their list. If you posted or liked anything on Facebook or somebody's Instagram page.
We're on their
list. Whether it's hunting or shooting, you're on their list. And so he lets us know that when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, the police and the soldiers didn't use a list to confiscate guns. They kicked in everybody's doors. If there was a door and there was some, they kicked it down and asked people, do you have guns? And then they took them. If you weren't home, they just went through. Because most of us don't bother doing it. They get one, they figure there's 10 or 15 people out there that think that way. They get hundreds of them, they think there's a couple of thousand people. If you can lock up their switchboard, you can lock up their inboxes, you can jam their fax machines, they know they have a problem. And if we want to stop these things, we all need to send them an email every day. We got to drop them a phone call. You've got to tell them that you do not agree with this attack on your civil rights. So that's the moral of it, is get involved, say something. They actually listen when they hear people. But you got to be polite. If you start cursing at them, you use foul language, and it'll drop in the shredder. Be polite. Use facts. If your family's retirement is tied up in an NFA trust because you were lucky enough to buy stuff 40 years ago when you could get an automatic weapon or something like that, tell them that you're going to lose your shirt when they put these things through.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
I'd like to say our only resource is to file petitions every month in the legislative branch. And there are Kirk's Law Forum. If you look into this, we'll explain to you on videos, on YouTube. This is our only resource if this happens. File petitions of remonstrances for our grievances against bad actors and bad policies.
I got one other thing.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, turn.
I was.
Look. Here's the switch.
I was out of town when the carbon cap and trade thing was on. I sent Bill a text and I told him, I'm a carbon-based life form. I am not pollution. Now, my wife will say I leave some behind, but I personally am not pollution. And the science that carbon-based life forms are the problem on the planet, and that what we breathe out so that we can live is pollution. They've got things. Well, where their heads are, I can't find the light switch.
Thank you very much, Mike. Mike Pilsy.
And thank you for the time.
Oh, you bet. Colonel Dave Dodder was calling as I was trying to record the meeting there, so apparently he's probably saying that he's running behind, but you know, hopefully he'll be here. We'll talk with him a little bit later. He runs the Ashland Gun Club, which is why we wanted to hear from him this evening. What's that now?
Ashland Gun Club, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not an oxymoron. It's actually well attended and actually a very good gun club, you know, in that area.
We have over 500
members. Over 500 members? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's you have to go beyond that. And before we turn it over to Mr. X as we talk about some constitutional thing, because the reason we're doing this is not only so that you realize that there's a lot of people that we're all friends on this issue, okay? And that's important that you know. Sometimes it's easy to think that you're alone or that it's just a handful of people. Well, here it is a Thursday night on a beautiful evening when we should be gardening or drinking beer or doing something like that. Here we are, right? And this is a good thing. But it's also about, just like we did with House Bill 2020 and cap and trade, it's about comment, getting written comments in, like Mike said, getting those faxes in, getting the phone calls in. They count noses. And if all of a sudden they're showing up with 1,000, 2,000 emails a week from various people, you know, on these issues, they go, oh, you know, maybe it's a little bit more. And by the way, Oregon Firearms has an incredible website, and yes, you can use their automatic emailer to reach all of the legislators and committee members. That's great. If you can take the time and do them on your own and send them so that they're different, that's even better. I really do think that's better. I mean, if you can't, that's fine. You can rework what they have. Just kind of, you know, good, solid boilerplate. But it's really good boilerplate. I think that's what we need to keep in mind. Also, there is another way. All of these, I didn't see the handouts that were in here. I had some of my own that I was going through. But all of these firearms bills, all of these anti-Second Amendment bills can be tracked very easily. You go to OregonLegislature.gov, sign up for a free account, and you can do it for other aspects other than just firearm laws. You can get news from your favorite legislators, if you have any. There are some. There are some. But you can also actually click. Down there, there's like 1,000 or 2,000 bills underneath there by number that you can sit there and say, all right, I want to track Senate Bill 2020 or House Bill 2020. I want to track Senate Bill 501, which would be the 20 rounds of ammo a month. And anything happens to it, you'll know. When something happens and you get that notification, realize, okay, time for me to start with comments and getting on the horn with people again. You know, that's what you can do. Sign up, works really well, absolutely free, and I can't recommend it enough. It's a great way to stay in touch with what's happening. It doesn't have to just be firearms. It's just a way, they actually make it easy for you to track bills in this state if you ask them to send you the notification. So it's OregonLegislature.gov, okay?
Bill?
Yes.
People may not know, and they want to take advantage of this, but Oregon Firearms Federation Foundation is one of the organizations in the state of Oregon that a couple can, individual, it's $50, a couple up to $100.
Yep.
You can claim that on your income tax next year and get that money back from the state to send it right back.
That's right. You keep the $100 for a couple or $50 for a single tax filer for the tax credit. Keeps it out of the Oregon legislature's mitts. So I'm good with that anyway. Well, I wish we could do a lot.
Kate don't get.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the way we look at it. All right.
Can you repeat that? The website?
Oregon Legislature.
Okay, the other one that he said.
OregonFirearms.org.
And it's their political action committee and their education fund.
Yeah, there's the political action committee and the educational fund. They are different.
So read the small print if you want to do it for a tax credit.
Yeah, there we go.
OregonFirearmFederation.org.
What?
ORFF, OregonFirearmFederation.org.
Yes.
You don't have to join to do the email thing.
No, you don't have to join them to become the email. Although I highly recommend you do.
I've already got like free from Merkley and Hammar.
Yeah, I know.
It's the same old crap. So.
All right. Before we turn it over to Mr. X, just so you know what we're facing this time, I'm just going to mention all the bills. Tax credit for background check fees, that's House Bill 2546. Paul Evans, who's sponsoring it, though, is anti-gun. And it's just a little token as he screws everybody else over, okay? House Bill 2950 allows the purchasing of a qualifying gun safe to be subtracted from your federal taxable income. Of course, you know part of this is that they're thinking that it's going to be required by the state government. Maybe this is something they're doing out in advance. Now then, House Bill 3149, this is the one that says you have to be at least 21 to purchase firearms, period. As it is right now, it's 18. You purchase long guns at 18, you have to wait until you're 21. And it also exempts anti-discrimination statutes for enforcement of gun laws, all right? That was 3149, Mr. X. 3223, this is a bad one. Requires person who owns an assault weapon on the date of the act to register your assault weapon. Of course, I would almost bet that none of us have an assault weapon here. We may have AR-15s or semi-automatic rifles.
Oregon rifle.
But yeah, it's an Oregon rifle. Yes?
Yeah, Bill, does Oregon have a definition, their definition of an assault weapon?
They do in the law. And it means that if it's a rifle that you like and own. I'm not kidding. Essentially,
if you can hold it with two hands.
If you can hold it with two hands, essentially, that is an assault rifle. And it's astounding how many what we think of as just common sense hunting rifles would now be redefined assault rifle by the state. What's that now?
If you pull the trigger and shoots.
If you pull the trigger and it shoots, yeah, that's another good one. That's the Kate Brown definition. House Bill 3151, state police would conduct a study on attempted unlawful firearm transfers, probably the most commonly violated firearms law in Jackson County, since the county already said, and the sheriff also said, they were not going to enforce that law. So needless to say, they want to check a list and check it twice and see if you've been naughty or nice, ultimately. Let's see. House Bill 3223, register your assault weapon or take specified action within a year. Yep, prohibits the manufacture, transport, or possession of assault weapons except in specified circumstances, meaning police and government agents usually. Quite a few, I would imagine. House Bill 3265, if you have a standard capacity magazine, 30 rounds for an AR-15, how many have them? I do. Yeah. You would have 180 days to get rid of it. You'd have to either destroy it, sell it, leave it, have it leave the state, whatever, the other.
How did you get it?
Well, you could always say that too. And you couldn't use it. And by the way, we have another, well, I'll get to the other one here. Now we're getting into Senate bills. Senate Bill 5, this is the one that would be attacking our shooting ranges. Strict liability on shooting ranges and shooters for rounds that leave the property and cause injuries. Oddly enough, this bill came up because someone was illegally shooting in a quarry, or out of a quarry, and the bullets went there. So all of a sudden, it morphed from people doing illegal shooting in a quarry to, we're going to go after all the gun ranges where there are no problems. So this is the way they're looking at it.
Hey, Bill?
Yes.
Liability means these gun ranges will not be able to get personal injury insurance, and nobody's going to do business under
Those. NRA's not going to cover him, I would imagine, even at that point. By the way, that's Dr. Stephen Greenleaf. He's another guest on the show quite often, Steve the Marine, and he dropped by here. So thank you for your help on this show. And you may have something to say here later, too.
Yeah, a little 2 minutes later.
Okay. Senate Bill 501. For the first time in Oregon, you would require to have a permit to be able to purchase a firearm, period. I know you watch other television shows and you see that, oh, did you have your firearm purchasing, your firearm ownership card? Yep, we would go all full Chicago. It's really worked well in Chicago, if you can know from the crime stats. Magazines over 5 rounds are banned. 5 rounds. My concealed carry pocket pistol has 6. That would be considered contraband then under this law. This is one of the worst ones. Requires trigger locks, ammo purchase 20 rounds a month, background checks for ammo purchases, waiting period for 14 days, but the sky's the limit. The sky would be the limit because they would not have to release it if the next check, if the Oregon State Police can't come up with an answer. No firearms for you, doesn't matter. You don't really need firearms. It's kind of the way they look at it. Senate Bill 539, actually okay, they would ban tracer ammo and exploding targets during really bad fire season. That actually makes common sense. That's one of the few. It would probably be okay. People would be hurt under Senate Bill 781, because if you were hurt, you could bring a lawsuit against a city or county that fails to regulate the discharge of firearms on private property. So what do you think counties would end up doing? Making it really hard to to use firearms on your private property. Senate Bill 801, public schools would provide firearm safety and accident prevention classes. It's a good bill, it could be a good bill, but that means it won't pass. Senate Bill 817 creates a crime of unlawful storage of the firearm. Could have a year in jail, $6,200 fine or both. Requires gun dealers to post notices concerning your obligation to store firearms in a safe manner. You can't sell, deliver, or transfer a firearm to a person convicted of unlawful storage of firearms, too, for 5-year periods, and punishes unlawful sale, delivery, or transfer by a maximum of 1 year in prison. Absolutely fascinating. I didn't even got into the hunting bills. We'll let the hunting bills are just horrendous, too. The whole situation is just a very, very rough time. So we're going to talk now. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. X, and he's going to be going into it. Steve, you may weigh in on some of this a little later, okay? Because he's going to be going over some Supreme Court decisions and how you can use a lot of what's happened in the law and in the courts in the basis of your comments. So if you want to make a note or two, you know, as we go, I certainly hope you do. Ladies and gentlemen, here's it.
This is a tough one because it's how to start, how to transfer the information correctly and adequately. So the first thing that I'm going to do, and I'm going to go to it like everybody does. Well, you can't do this because this is our Second Amendment, okay? So you look at the actuals. Now, the Second Amendment reads, the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution reads, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, I'm going to stop there because that's the most important word that you can remember is shall. Now, the next most important thing that we have to remember is how are they bringing this about and how do they defeat us? They defeat us with an argument based on lies, okay? And the lies that they talk about are the U.S. versus Miller was one of them back in 1939. They say that they have the right to regulate, okay? Now, the Miller decision, I have all kinds of documents up here that I can read from, I can take you to, but the essence of the Miller decision was that it imposed a tax upon a sawed-off shotgun, machine guns, and silencers. You were supposed to pay a tax, and the actual charge of these men was because they transported it untaxed, unstamped, as they call it, across state lines, and that did what? It put it into interstate commerce. So now they were able to do this, okay? There has been no court decision that is held, any other decision than that, that really is prominent. Now, we have one coming up that I'll go into in a little bit that we want to watch for the decision on. But you, as you look at this, you go into it, as you heard me read the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, I'm going to go over, before I go there, let me go to this. Sir, I think Kate had printed up a document here, and there might be some out there. But this is a very good article, okay? And it's the Founding Fathers Explain the Second Amendment. This says it all. The other part of the argument from the other side that wants to take your rights away from you is basically they say that the Founding Fathers in the Federalist Papers, okay, argued that it shouldn't happen. Well, the Federalist Papers were a group of articles that were designed only to get the approval of the Constitution done and get it over with. They were convincing articles on either way, but the end result, the absolute end result of all of this was our Constitution. And the Constitution contains what word? Shall not be infringed, okay? Now, when we go to make comments, and all of this is about how to provide comment, because that's what counts. We can stand up and say, you're violating our Second Amendment right. We can put it down and think. But if you really track it down, we have to track it down into the Oregon part of it. Now, the Oregon part of the Constitution, this is a definition off the front page off the Oregon Legislature website, okay? The Oregon Constitution contains fundamental laws outlining the principles by which Oregon is governed. Okay? So as I go through this, what do I see? I see that, well, we have to have a constitution, and how does that relate to the federal constitution that has those words shall? So I look at that and I say, well, let's go to the real document that defines the relationship between the state of Oregon and the federal government, and that's the Oregon Admissions Act from 1859. Okay.
That set up the whole process.
That set it up. And it's all in the preamble. Okay. Whereas the people of Oregon have framed, ratified, and adopted a constitution of state government which is republican in form and in conformity with the Constitution of the United States, and have applied for admission into the Union on an equal footing with the other states. Therefore, and then it goes through the admissions language at that point. But what do you have with that? That's a contract of specific performance.
And that's how we have to start addressing these people. We have to start working those things in that you don't have the right to even put this bill on the desk. If we find that these are the intrusions, we have to address it like that. I go into this.
Now, by the way, Ed, I'm going to interject a little bit if you don't mind here. This is going back into, remember how last time we were doing the carbon cap and trade, we were looking for specific phrases that you could inject in your comment, like we were doing. And were we talking about fiduciary duty?
That's right.
And harms.
That's exactly
and
right.
Intrusions.
And I'm going to go into that in detail in a moment so you understand it. And this is the thing. And again, I might have showed this last time. This was a great little document. Jeff Golden sent this out. It came to my house.
Hey, that's great.
Okay? Isn't it? Well, it's wonderful. In reality, it's the most wonderful thing that we can all have. Okay? With what I'm going to take you to in this. But he starts off by saying, "Dear friends, on the second Monday in January, I took the oath of office to represent you in the Oregon State Senate. Thank you for entrusting me with this honor. Now it's time to get to work. We can't wait any longer." And then he goes his bold action on climate, you know, and his other little things. But then he goes to one of the most important things. And this is what we have to pay attention to. "I'm one of 90 people in the Oregon legislature who will debate and make laws in the months to come. But in the end, we won't make the difference. The changes we need will only happen if thousands of people like you demand them." Okay? Now think about that. Mr. Golden is telling you exactly what this meeting is all about, is to get you in a mindset of making that statement, standing up for what this country is and was. Everything throughout history points to that. Now, to go along with that, I took you to that the part of it. Now here's his oath. You talk about fiduciary obligation and duty, okay? The oath of office for a member of the legislature is in the Constitution of the state of Oregon, okay? So this is stuff that I'm not up here handing you out my opinion. This is the actual thing that is written in the Constitution. The oath of the members, okay? "The members of the legislative assembly shall, before they enter on the duties of their respective offices, take and subscribe the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear, or affirm as the case may be, that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Oregon." Now what, I'm going to stop there for a moment. If he supports the Constitution, has taken an oath to the Constitution of the United States, what does that mean when it says the word shall in the beginning? It means that he is already violating his obligation and duty. If there is a historical record via our comments in that respect relative to that bill, they have to consider it. Why? Because according to the Admissions Act, they were to set up a government that was Republican in form. In other words, our opinions matter. Okay? That's the whole nine yards. That's the crux of it as we go. Now, let me finish one more thing here with this. Got to figure out where I was here.
Yeah, let me interject here.
Go ahead.
Let me give you a pop filter.
Okay.
There we go.
Thank you. I get excited about this. I'm sorry. It gets my goat when I look at this thing. And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of senator or representative, as the case may be, according to the best of my ability. And such oath may be administered by the governor, secretary of state, or a judge of the Supreme Court. Now, what do you have? You've got the governor, a judge of the Supreme Court, and what else was it? It was a secretary of state. Okay? So that, what does that mean? That oath is pretty important to establish his obligation and duty to who? To us. So now what we have to do is arm ourselves with the direction that we can take and word these things to these people in a way that is, it's inexcusable for them to move forward in things. Because even if they do move forward, we will win eventually. Okay, that's the simple truth. They throw these cases out, and as we get into that, there's another one that I'll go to, but remember what I just said, and I'll show you the case
that they threw out in D.C. Okay, there was one where the D.C. established a precedent where they were literally telling people they had to lock in their homes their guns into a they had to disassemble it or lock it into a non-fireable mode. Either way, they couldn't even keep it unlocked in their own home. Okay, now that was thrown out. Why? Because shall not infringe. Okay, so the precedent stands. These are Supreme Court decisions, and like it or not, as much as I can read you all of the constitutional aspects of things, what we have to remember is that the Supreme Court decisions are the ones that really count. We have to look at that, analyze it, and if the judge is wrong or if we feel he's wrong, we got to read what he, you know, in his opinion, what he related to. And that's how they break it down. But as we go through this, now I've covered that part, but I'm going to take you to something that's very vitally important to all of us. Your county commission, a couple years ago, they did a proclamation when there was this background check bill. But they established the position of your county. And this was very, very good. This was a well thought out and good document. And I'm going to read a couple of the paragraphs because they're vitally important. Whereas the people of Jackson County, by and through their elected board of county commissioners, desire to reaffirm and support the protections and rights granted by the Constitution of the United States of America and the Constitution of the State of Oregon. And whereas all public officials elected or appointed to an office under the Constitution of the State of Oregon swear an oath to support these instruments. And whereas the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America and the absolutely clear language of Article 1, Section 27 of the Constitution of the State of Oregon provide that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And the next one was, whereas attempts at incremental infringements shall be construed as an overt disregard of the undeniable protections and rights of these aforementioned documents. So when you go into that, the wording of that was critical because it tied it into every aspect of that whole line of what you have to understand when it goes. Now, I don't know if you all remember, about a year ago, I think it was, when the Dick's Sporting Goods refused to sell a kid a gun, a young man, I shouldn't say kid, I got to be politically correct, I'm sorry. I'm getting too old for my own good. But they refused to sell him a gun. They said he wasn't old enough to buy a gun. Well, that was settled, okay? And Walmart was being sued, and that case hasn't been finished yet. But they will end up losing. And you know why they'll end up losing? Because the constitutional relationship that they have to maintain with that Republican form of government through the Admissions Act to the Constitution brings you to ORS 396.105. Militia comprised of organized and unorganized militia. Now the first part of this deals with the National Guard. That's the organized militia. The unorganized militia shall consist of all able-bodied residents of the state between the ages of 18 and 45 who are not serving in any force of the organized militia or who are not on the state retired list and who are or who have declared their intention to become citizens of the United States, subject, however, to such exemptions from military duty as are created by the laws of the United States.
That's a very important statement there because that's a law. That is an Oregon law right now.
That's right.
In other words, you can't deny an 18-year-old.
That's exactly right.
But for that very reason.
What I want to point out is that during the whole case, if you paid attention to it, what you would have to notice is they did that with an administrative procedure, and then the way that they charged it and did the entire thing was through an administrative law section that had to do with employee-employer relationship. So what we have to notice is these things. When it comes in and there are certain things happen, we have to do that. Now, that 3149 that Bill read off there a little bit ago, that is directly related to that one. That's the important one. If you go to that 3149, And maybe read that again if you've still got it there.
Yeah, allows gun dealer or person transferring firearm at gun show to establish minimum age of at least 21 years of age
for
purchase of firearms.
So what does the relationship tell you? Between 18 and 45. So at 18, and all of what all of that is for is so that if there is a problem, that you can draw upon our population to defend the country and the state.
So there is another example, though, of something to include in a comment, like we mentioned.
That's exactly right.
When you're commenting on the House Bill 3149, if you wish to, and I would hope you would.
So now I have to get back to where I wanted to go with this.
We'll take a few questions here. Well, maybe we should take a couple of questions right now. Do you mind? Is it okay, or would that interrupt the flow? Or?
Well, let me do one thing, and then we can.
Okay. All right.
No.
Don't want to break the stride.
This is in Section 1 of the beginning of our Constitution of the State of Oregon, okay? Natural rights inherent in people. We declare that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people. And all free governments are founded on their authority. That means us. That means every bit of this. But we have to communicate to a T what we're talking about here, because that way we can overwhelm and overpower the other side. That the educational aspects of how government is supposed to work in our school system is so far beyond repair right now. We have to start doing this by word of mouth, by talking to people, by having conversations. And going back to the argumentative thing, if you're in a conversation with someone and they say, well, all of that was decided, they can regulate anything because of Miller back in 1939. Look up the case, read it, understand that it was all about a $200 tax stamp. That's the only way. And the only reason that it even got stuck at that point was because Miller, by the time that it came to do their actual presentation, Miller was, I think he was dead, actually, is what it was. He was shot and killed.
Yeah, Steve, we actually talked about it on the show one time. Miller didn't show up for his case, did he?
I have no idea. I know we've
talked about that.
No, he did not.
He did not show up. Yeah.
And then the decision stayed that they could keep within the Commerce Clause to have that $200 tax. So when the person or persons or legislators or whoever what we're trying to do, we have to make sure that we can understand the fundamental right that we have, but understand that there are responsibilities that go along with what I read you about that militia, about that 18-year-old thing. Because they actually have another Oregon statute, ORS 396140, registration of unorganized militia. Whenever the governor deems it necessary, the governor may direct the members of the unorganized militia to present themselves for and submit to registration at such a time and place in such a manner as may be prescribed by military department regulations issued pursuant to this ORS chapters 398 and 399. Two, any member of the unorganized militia who is ordered to register under the provisions of this section can be drafted into the organized militia under ORS 396135, and that's militia call by the United States. Okay, so this is going into how much you want to understand and love about this country. They were counting on us to protect everything in all of our lives, all the way down from, and we have allowed a certain group of people to misconstrue a lot of things. And I look at it and I say, well, if we can create the right comment, if we can come away with the right attitude and the right ideas and understand that when someone argues a point and they're incorrect in that point, now we can correct it. And that's why I try to do what I do all the time, is to get the information, the actual documents and words in front of people so that you can have these conversations, so that you can educate people and keep going with it.
Okay, why don't we take a couple of questions here while we're at it. You've been waiting there for a while.
Yeah,
go ahead and stand up, be very loud.
Yeah, that's great information you're giving us, but I didn't know a lot of this stuff about the state constitution. I do know about the U.S. Constitution now, and maybe you could elaborate a little bit between the Second and the Tenth Amendment, because we're just violating the hell out of the Second by using the 10th, because the 10th Amendment says all rights not granted belong to the states.
That's right.
And the Second Amendment firmly states so
all rights, you just said what the actuality is. So, but it's up to us to remind them.
That's the basic point right there.
Right.
Yeah.
They have no leg to stand on.
They don't.
And they need their needs vote.
But we have to have...
well, that goes without saying.
That part of it, we got to... I'll put it this way. Our baseball bat is a pen, okay,
yes.
Or our fingers to type it. That's the simplest way. My whole goal is to prevent unrest and educate people so that we don't have to deal with this. I don't like the idea that they would even come up with these bills and threaten us during this legislative session. It takes our time. It takes our energy.
I would add, Bill, before we go on to the next question here, Mr. Eckstead, I'm on a lot of email trees in Jackson and Josephine County that I don't normally talk about on the radio show. And there's a good reason that I don't. Because the underground is not ready to cooperate, if you want to call it that, the underground of the militia Second Amendment. And they see sporty times coming. And I have to tell you, when some people say, hey, bring it on, and then we'll have that. No, we don't want to go there if we can help it. You know, you really don't want to go to that kind of unrest or people being, being hurt, because then you have no idea where it ends up going. I'll get to you in just a second here, John. There's a gentleman in the back that he was.
So I do have a question. You said unorganized militia.
Yes.
Being right to bear arms, Second Amendment, is in order to have a well-organized militia, well-regulated. Would that just mean any gun owner is a part of the
I'm trying to get to hear all of your questions.
The unorganized militia, could any gun owner be considered for that fact part of the militia?
By statute, if I look at the actual statute, By statute, the unorganized militia, and again we come to the marvelous word, shall consist of all able-bodied residents of the state between the ages of 18 and 45 who are not serving in any force of the organized militia or who are not in the state retired list.
Now, does this mean, though, that over 45 we don't have gun rights, though?
No, it does not.
I mean, seriously, you have to ask that kind of thing. Because you could see someone bringing that up. All right, go ahead, gentlemen, front, and I'll work my way around the room here. Go ahead.
I just have two
nice comments. And loud.
I have two comments. One, about voicing your opinion.
Yes.
I ended up in Facebook jail because of my position that I took against Dick's Sporting Goods when they decided to stop selling AR-15s.
Yes.
Okay. I just found a notice yesterday, and I don't know when it exactly happened, but the fact that Dick's Sporting Goods has actually lost almost 130% of their revenue from gun sales because we stopped using Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And what happened yesterday is 137 stores are no longer going to sell guns.
Or hunting gear, yeah.
Dick's Sporting Goods had 11% of their stock price crater because they announced that. Because people switched. And by the way, I have no axe to grind against people who work there. Hey, you need a job, you need a job. But people decided to work and take their gun business to places that actually supported their right.
And the other one was to refer to a comment that was made over here. I'm a member of the Ashland Gun Range.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's the Ashland Gun and Archery Club. Okay. We, over there, not here, but over there, kind of sort of feel like Custer at the battle.
You got arrows in your back, don't you?
We're in the middle of the fight, and we're trying to stand up for our rights, and we just beat back with the great expense that you talked about, $177,000, to beat back a stupid, idiot person saying that we were letting the ground. But we did that inside our club.
Bill.
Yes.
I'll get into that.
Okay. Oh, great.
So, which is awesome, but just for those of you that aren't members of the Ashland Gun and Archery Club, please, come join us. It's a great place to shoot, and we need all the help we can get.
All right, thank you very much. We've got to roll while we can. John, go ahead. Loud and proud.
Could Ed possibly
draft a letter that you could put on Bill Meyer's show or some other way that we could look at it, and then we could take and pick and choose from it, so that it's really clear and precise what you think we should do.
Maybe some talking points, some basic talking points, like we did with House Bill 2020.
I'll try to do that.
So I would say give us a couple of days to work this up. This right now we're just laying the groundwork today with our meeting.
Words and terminology would really help also, because the words are important.
Words and terminology are important, which is why we did that discussion last week, the other week, fiduciary duty,
so
etc. All right, gentlemen in the red hat, the MAGA hat. Don't beat him up.
That $100 a bit paid to OFF is 100% refundable, because you're not gonna, instead of paying state taxes, you just save on paying state, and the state's taking our rights, so don't pay state. That $100 can go to OFF and they have to do your hell of a job.
All right, thank you very much. Behind the MAGA hat.
Yeah, so in regards to what the gentleman was saying about flooding the emails, faxes, and that sort of thing. I work on copy machines every day. I got half a dozen guys that also do.
So you have copy machines, and
I gotta send test faxes. I gotta send test scans. You give me some pieces of paper that needs to be on it.
Yes.
I have half a dozen guys at 10 machines every day going to whatever phone is going to be coming from different destinations.
Because it's going to come from different places, and they're not, and that's one of the problems. Yeah. So, could you leave your card, okay? Dead serious about that. All right, lady, please. Up, nice and loud.
Yes, I'm Linda from Shady Cove, and I have a suggestion for you. Our forefathers, when they faced this situation many years ago, wrote a Declaration of Independence, and I think we need our own Declaration of Independence, because I will gladly sign my John Hancock to that.
I was actually going to bring and read that part of it tonight, just to reinvigorate people.
Okay, I'll take one more question, then we got to run. We have limited time here.
I learned something new. It didn't say men.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We have to have women in this militia, and women who will teach women how to shoot. We are the number one new shooter in the nation.
Right.
Women.
Yes.
By the way, I would add that most women can be much better shooters than men, because they don't come to it thinking, "Hey, I know everything." I'm dead serious. I mean,
my wife learned to shoot, and we don't argue anymore because she can.
Yes, Phil.
That girl
okay,
never
Phil,
misses.
Okay, Phil, we'll give you a mic. We got to run. Okay.
I want to tell everybody about a success that Jackson, the people in Jackson County, had in either '90 or '91. The state was looking for a place to put a prison. We were in the Central Point area, and we and about a dozen, maybe 15 other people opposed it. And there was a group in Medford who was kind of run by a PR guy of about the same number. And he got this, he knew how to send out press releases and what have you. And he got our three channels to come where the two groups joined. And it made it look like it was a whole bunch of people. And it was about 30. When the list that the state put out for the prison, it had five lines. The number one choice was blank. Number two was Ontario. Apparently they thought Jackson County didn't want the prison, but Ontario went, and guess who has the prison? We did not get the prison. The state had already bought the land, but they never used it, because 30 people here were organized and made a presentation that apparently the state powers to be recognized and didn't want to confront.
Yeah, if you think that small numbers can't have an impact, just be a mosquito in a room, right? Someplace?
You know, what you just said you know, that's component, like, look at what we did. Look at what we did with the 2020 bill when we supported it. Now, I don't know where it's going to go. And I can't stand here and absolutely guarantee that they're not going to try to push this through. But I'll tell you what, I totally believe that even if they try to do it, that we can stop them in the eventuality that they do in the long run. We will win. We will ultimately be victorious if we choose to try to take it there. But what I've noticed is that if we provide the right comment in the beginning and remind them of their duty, their obligation to serve us, okay, like Jeff Golden's favorite quote right here, it'll take many thousands of people commenting to do this, to do their whole program.
He's inviting us.
That's right.
He's inviting
us. He is inviting us. He's not only inviting them. Now, and a second part of this is what I talk about consistently. If there is part of this program, all of these bills, you can actually type them into a Google search. It's very simple. Type it in and ask for the consensus stakeholder meeting notes, the compilation of all the meetings that they've had with the background group. Then that gives you the ability to call it out as a consensus-based process that wasn't necessary. It wasn't legal, because if there are other laws that stop that process, they can't do it.
You remember how we talk about the consensus process, in which one liberal gets in a room with a few other liberals and they all agree that we're going to rape the rights of some other group who's not a stakeholder in the room. We've talked about that. You called that process out.
That's exactly
fraudulent.
Right.
And a lot of these gun-grabbing bills are also crafted through the same process.
Right. And this is where, when you hear the thing about Bloomberg's money is pushing the issue, Bloomberg put money into this area, or he did it, this is how the money is filtered out. It's filtered out into these groups with a predetermined outcome of pushing this type of bill through, and they go to the legislature and they lie. They historically establish what they call the consensus of approval of the public, because we don't comment. Once we start commenting and we have that edge, we have that historical record, now we can start placing the demands on these people for performance. Well, actually, I got an email the other day, and
there's a question on how do we know.
How do we know?
If
you
we
go
have
to
one.
The Oregon Legislative website, there is actually all of the comments, all of the written comments are posted. Everything that everybody put in writing, in that particular bill as an argument against it was posted. And when you go through that right now, it is huge. I mean, there's just many, 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 many comments, and that's how they've been doing this. No one understands that simple process is taking place. When you make a substantial or substantive comment,
meaningful.
When it's correct, meaningful public comment, that carries more weight than standing there saying, this is my pocket constitution, and it says in the Second Amendment, you shall not infringe. Well, if you look at it and you say, you don't have the legal right to do what you did because you violated your oath at this point, which takes us to the subject matter of Oregon Revised Statute 396-185, which requires us to have able-bodied young people as militia.
Okay, so we're going to be putting these kind of talking points into a list, and I would say give us probably till early next week to put this together. Like I said, this was just get together, no, you're not alone, kind of my, and to answer a few questions. That's really kind of what we're doing, hitting some high points right
exactly.
now.
And what we got to do is get everybody motivated to stay together and do this. This is part of this whole thing. I thank the efforts of Kate, who helped me put this together, who helps everything go together on this. Because we have to be able to do this. And thank God for Bill. I mean, this is, like with everything.
Hey, when you don't care who gets credit, you get a lot done.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Y
The point of fact, in the end of it all, though, you're sitting in one of the historic meeting places for this type of thing. This goes back to when this was originally constructed. And it was constructed from, as I understand it, the timbers were cut down right off of Roxy Ann up behind it, and they created this, and they created it as a place for this type of thing to happen, so that we didn't get into a problem with our representatives, who by oath owe us a certain level of fiduciary duty and obligation to do the right thing, okay? So what we have to do is exercise this part of it, and we're going to try to do this as, you know, often as we can to try to get people in there and get people motivated and understanding of it all as best we can, so.
All right, so is it? Have you pretty much covered most of what you wanted to discuss here?
Yeah, I know.
He comes into the show with, you know, like three reams of papers, like, oh, primate, how are we going to distill this down into like a half hour?
This is the thing that you have to understand here. Now, this is an article, Cato at Liberty. Supreme Court finally takes up a Second Amendment case. Now, you got to remember the last case that I spoke about in D.C., that was in 2008. So that's 10 years ago.
That was the Miller decision, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what did it hold in 2008? It held that they couldn't do what they were doing. Okay. But the guy, if you read the Heller case, it's terrible because the guy didn't push through for what he could have. And he basically said, well, all I want is the license and the ability to have a loaded gun in my house. Well, what do you need a license to have a loaded gun in your house for? The other thing that occurred to me is, what is Washington, D.C.?
A district.
It's the District of Columbia. It's not the state of Washington, D.C. It is the District of Columbia. So there's a different viewpoint of this whole thing. That's the whole thing. It's all literally that spot of land, as I understand it. And Steve, maybe you can help me with that. It's federally owned, I believe. The entire district isn't.
Exclusive jurisdiction.
That's right.
Article
1, Section 8, absolute control of D.C. That's what the feds have, constitutionally.
They're doing a great job, aren't they?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Well, again, you got to keep track of where this goes. What we want to do is take into account the actual findings of the judges. And when you're sitting there, if you have nothing to do, this is what I do. I sit back and I look at it. Well, I go to the Supreme Court decision in Heller, and then I've got the...
this guy has no mind, by the way.
Actually, it just starts early in the morning. But I go into it, and I find the actual Supreme Court decisions, and it's busted up into the actual judge's opinion. And that's what's critical. And I'll find this in here real quick, and I'll let Bill take some questions, or we'll try to take some questions while I'm half looking through here. But what you have to understand is the judges' opinions are what give you your constitutional relationship. And when the judge says that the right of the unalienable right, basically, to possess and have guns shall not be restricted, it's there. I mean, that whole thing has to be that way. I'm going to read that again. Necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And now when the judges break that down, and their opinion goes on for a page and a half, two, three pages of actual reading of why they felt that, what do we do? Do we sit there and ignore that? Most of us do. But that's the truth of the argument. And in the end of it, the truth is what you find in these documents. And I'll do my best to try to bring it out so that you can look at it in brief glimpses and see what it is and use it empowering yourself to it. But when you find these things and the judges all agree, over time, since the Constitution was adopted, what we have here is a clear sign that this is not able to be infringed. So as we go through it, now we can have the state of Oregon step in and try to pass these bills, but they will realize, if we put the right information in front of them, that we're going to stand there with these protections in mind, they will back off I hope that we get to that point.
Yeah, there's no guarantee to it.
Real quick.
Okay, by the way, thank you, Mr. X. We're going to break down some questions and then maybe talk about a few other things. And by the way, how many people here have email before we take some questions? All right. If we were to put out some sheets of paper, could I get all your email addresses? Because what I think I might do...
Sign-in sheet had spot for our email
address. Has spot that. Okay, has everybody signed in?
Yeah.
Okay, because what we'll do, what I'll do with that, and I'm not going to spam you or anything like that, if it's okay with you... When Mr. X and I, we end up crafting some of these bullet points that we could start using in these comments, would it be okay if I send it to you?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what's that now?
What will the heading be so it doesn't go to the spam folder?
Let's see. Hi, I'm Julie from Health Services. No, that's good. In all seriousness, what should we do to avoid spam filters if we...
Oregon Firearms.
Okay. What I might do is just put out an Oregon Firearms, or I just might say, or I might say from KMED and KCMD. I might put that on it, okay? Okay, well, I'll work on that then. Okay, I'll work on that. If you leave your emails, we'll get you on that list, so this way we can communicate. I think what happened with 2020, it took them a little time to get the cap and trade talking points together, and then when we actually had that meeting, they had already put that stuff out a few weeks prior, so we're working a little bit behind. They're not moving any of the gun bills yet. We still have some time to get prepped.
When you use our emails from the cap and trade, because some of us didn't sign in because we signed in before.
Right.
Cap and trade. So you use those emails?
I don't have that. So, okay. if you could just sign in before you take off in, and that way we'll try to make it as easy as possible. You can craft your own comments, but you have some good verbiage to help you. And I think that's important. Gentlemen in the cap there. Go ahead, I'll get there.
Ed, I assume you're not an attorney. One thing that would really challenge the legislature is to know that there's a Oregon Firearms Legal Defense Fund with an attorney on retainer. If any of these bills go to law, they will be challenged legally. That would be an important thing for them to know.
Well, that, you bring up an excellent point, and it's, I get wound up in this side of it, and even tonight with the printing that Kate was telling me about, the building and everything, I've got to be forced to ask if you can help us out with that part of it to continue these things. But in organization, what we have to do is push forward to look at what Bill just said about this email address. We have to stay where we can notify people. We have to stay. Now, we have... the radio show is a wonderful avenue that we can do all the time. But when we sit here and we look at this, we're going to have to sit back and say, what can we do in the eventuality that it does happen? Well, we have to exhaust all of the things that we have constitutionally before we sue to see if we can get them to do the right thing.
The best lawsuit is like the best gunfight, the one you didn't have
to
fight.
That's
exactly the one you don't have.
And they should know you have one.
That's true, though.
The best defense.
Okay. Second Amendment Foundation, because they do all they're filing lawsuits all the time. Would that be maybe a viable way that we could really jump in with them?
Well, it's possible in those terms. I would think myself that regionally that we can sway them, or if the suit comes from the damage within, that they didn't consider the importance of firearms, okay, to the rural residents of the state, to the agricultural people, to all of these things, to have them just arbitrarily say, this is what we're going to do. We can't let them do that. And with the right input, if they want to put an ordinance up in Portland, hey, go to it. You're not going to do it here. This is my whole thing.
When you're defining an issue that seems to be actually national, it is obviously here, and that's the fact that the rural areas of the state are absolutely overwhelmed. There's already somebody's introduced a bill in New York to split the state into three, keep the state divided into three jurisdictions, because New York absolutely does not represent the rest of it. Right. What happens to the rest of the state is under colonial rule. We are under colonial rule.
here, well, by a small area of the state. Is it Sims versus Reynolds that kept us from being able to, for instance, have the Senate with representative equally from each county? Or is it like in Northern California where they have almost no representation at all because it's one man, one vote?
So, you know, you're taking me to a point now, I've got to go into a explanation that we don't have the time for, to be honest with you. And I would actually like to do it and explain that to people, okay?
But
I'll give you the briefest answer that I can on those types of empowerments, okay? And the briefest answer is the example of what they did with the smart meters here, okay? And I don't know if everybody knows what they did with the smart meters or what has happened, but through the pressure of the public, the first thing that happened, there was a $136 or $137 fee to opt out fee.
$36 a month.
And then $36 a month. And that was, first off, they threw the fee out. And the second step was, now they've reduced it, I think it's going to end up being $9 a month. Now, my whole point on that is that if public comment did that, and it did, I'm there. Trust me, it did.
And I would also add that I disagree with Josephine County when they did their lawsuit.
Right.
But I think even though they would have lost the lawsuit had it gone into the legal food chain.
That's exactly right. There would have been a negative impression.
It created enough public pressure, though, that Pacific Power said, we need to... to cut this down or be more reasonable, as it were.
And that's, that's the thing. It's a perception. And you have to understand that legally, when they extort money through a legislative move or a policy move, they're committing a felony. That's the reality. 164075. I told you that last time on the other thing. If they extort this money and somebody is enriched, and it's unnecessary and it's too much, that's extortion. And the other one is coercion. It's one more digit off of what I had there. When they do this and they force a policy, when they force something down your throat, they're aware of the damages, because in the legislative committees, they talk about the damage to people, and where can they get the money to do it? Where can they get the money to fight it? And these things, as long as we bring in some intelligent comments, like what we've been doing, okay, what we've been doing with this 2020 and what we're doing here, and what I keep trying to push forward is just certain thought processes so that we can get the right comment in front of people. And then if they can't operate. Go ahead.
Yeah. You were saying you're going to put out those bullet points. Email them. Are you going to put the bullet points on your website?
Yes, I will put them on the website. I will also print them out and have them at KMED and KCMD. So that way, if you don't have email, you could come down to the radio station after I announce it on the air, and then we could have some sheets, available. Because I know not everybody has email.
Right. Those would be the talking points that are most valuable.
Right. And I'll do my best to do everything on that. And the other point is that there's people in here who have a relatively strong legal mind or want to try to start transferring certain things. Sign up with Kate. She needs some people. She needs some help in that regard. The whole essence of this is coming through a need that was expressed to me by some folks of trying to create an educational avenue and start bringing in younger people, start bringing in people to understand the true value of this country as it was, not with hope and change to this monstrous thing that they're trying to throw on us. And the reality comes down to is that this was, when you read these documents, like this whole page is, I got 5 pages of the Founding Fathers, okay, talking about the Second Amendment. 5 pages of all of the things that these men said, and direct quotes of what they said. It's inspirational in every way to have someone read this. It's inspirational, yet it's clarifying. You can't walk away from it without an idea of what they said, that it was absolutely correct in what they determined. And then after you read that, then you read it back in the constitutional aspect to the Supreme Court decision, and you see them agreeing. that your argument, they actually are addressing, the Supreme Court justices are addressing, well, you have some arguments, you're arguing that the Founding Father interpreted this way. No, he didn't interpret, they didn't interpret it that way, because they break it up into two different parts and they look at it from two different directions, but they actually legally explain it. And there is no argument if you know that simple truth. So.
Okay. So please, get your email address and your name in there. I'm going to get this to you. It's probably going to take a few days, so don't be too impatient about it. We want to get you good information. And we're here early enough. I mean, there's a lot of legislative session left, unfortunately. Well, I guess... Well, this is going to be like till July or more. So, but we never know when they're going to start moving this stuff. But I think we have a few days to at least get our ducks in a row. But we needed to get together and know you're not alone, and that there are friends out there. We have great power that is untapped on this, and they are intruding. They are, who is it? One of my Facebook trolls who always goes after me, Andre. Andre the Troll, I nicknamed him that. And he says, nobody's coming to take your guns. And that's what he said. And you will get this from many people who are on the pro-state side of things. And I asked him, have you read the bills?
No.
No. In fact, most people have not read the bills. And when you read the bills, when you read and you find out there, you shall either register this AR-15 if you have it on possession the day that this law is passed, or else you are a felon and it can be subject. I mean, what happens if the OSP happens to see you going to a firearms range and they end up asking at some point, hey, have you registered this? Oh, you haven't. Well, let's go to the Jackson County Jail. Now, to be fair, I've already talked to people in the OSP. They don't want this stuff to happen. They really don't.
They don't want to deal with it.
But you could find yourself politically unpopular if you got in trouble for some other minor infraction and they come and they go through your home for some other reason. Child support services or protection services calls on you, or a fake call comes in, and then they start searching you out and saying, oh, was it registered? Okay, it wasn't registered. Boy, we're really sorry, but we have to enforce the law, right? So, you know, we have to be careful when you just go down to, I don't have to worry about these laws because we're going to just have a whole bunch of, we're not going to comply here in Jackson County. That works to an extent, but only to an extent. The best thing is to not have it happen.
Right, and that's, you know, there's another observation, the one thing, you know, that I forgot. The past couple of days, there's been a news story on how a lady was attacked in Grants Pass
by
her former spouse. Okay, how many have heard the story?
Ex-boyfriend. He's on the phone with 911 in Joco at 1 in the morning.
Right.
And this, kicking the door in.
Well, you have to think about it in a different light. Okay, what's the end result? That will most likely be reported statistically as an act of gun violence. Okay, yes. Now think about that aspect. So look at the people that are reporting it, and we have to start demanding the truth of that. That they're, if they have to, in a Senate consideration, in a legislative consideration, open up another avenue of consideration for actual people that have saved their own lives with that type of thing. It's not gun violence. It's an act of self-defense.
Bring those stories in as an example. I plan on using that Grants Pass story as a classic example. Most of these gun bills there would just assume that woman with her young child in her apartment or her home in Grants Pass would be dead, beaten, or worse. That's what they would prefer, or that would be the result. These would be, once again, the harms, right? The harms, the what-ifs. You can illustrate it. We had it happen right here locally. Why would you be going after people? Why would you be requiring them to register? Why would you be limiting their ability to train? Why would you limit that ability of that young woman to defend herself from a brutal attack by saying that you can only purchase 20 rounds of ammunition a month to practice, right? Think about that. You can bring those kind of stories up. and then tie it into the law and your opinions and various other issues. So
that's the important part.
Could we hear from Colonel Donner?
Yes, we were going to get to that. All right, Colonel Donner, take it away here. We'll get some words from you from the Ashland Gun Club. He did show up on time, though.
Yeah.
I was late as usual. Okay, well, a couple things. First off, you need to know what's been said about, do these things actually, your comments really make a difference? Just today, or yesterday, I was on the phone with a state senator from Eastern Oregon, one of the rural senators, and his comment to me was, you know, the Portland liberals thought that 2020 was on a roll, it was going through, and then they went out and they listened to people and they found out that, you know what, there's some real problems with this bill. So for you to think that it doesn't matter, it really does matter when you get out there and talk about it. So there's a couple things. I don't know if you had a chance to see the Mail Tribune article this morning about the fact that we at the Ashland Gun Club, and I will say this, and the city of Ashland, I know this shocks you, but the People's Republic of Ashland is incredibly supportive of the Ashland Gun and Archery Club. They really are. And we can, my point to you.
Yeah, you've been leasing from them since 68, right?
Yes, we've been leasing from them, and we've been there since 1911 in that community. And my point is this, you know, sometimes we need to remember that it's not what you say, it's what they hear. And so you have to take your message and you have to tune it to the person that you're talking to. Not all of them are going to be thinking the same way you do. They're going to be thinking about the issue a little bit differently and all. But we're really proud of the fact, thank you for standing up there and everything. Please, come join us. It's a great place to shoot, a wonderful place to shoot. And we're really high-end, we're really fancy. It's $85 a year for a family. That's it. So it's a great bargain. So anyways, what my point is this. You know, of course, as the president of the club, one of my jobs is to make sure that we maintain a good relationship with the city, because they do own the property. We have a lease with them and we have to follow that lease. It is in fact a legal document and all. And so I've been working very, very hard. I've had city councilors out there. I've had the mayor out there, and just to show them that, look, this is a good, clean, family-oriented, safe place for shooters to come to. Now, the other day I had, or I shouldn't say the other day, probably over a year ago, I had Pam Marsh out there. Now, Pam Marsh
is... I can't wait to hear this story.
Pam Marsh is my representative. Now, you're probably well aware that we don't think the same way politically, right? Probably very well aware of that. I took her out there. She spent an entire hour walking around the place. And when she got done, she said, you know what? I'm not a shooter, but people who want to shoot ought to have a good, clean, family-oriented place to come shooting. This is great, and I'll support you in any way that I possibly can. Now, believe me, she didn't go join the NRA the next afternoon, okay? I get it. But my point is that you can take people like this and you can at least make them neutral, or you can make them supportive of some aspect of it. So make sure that you're talking about it. She also told me another very interesting story. If you remember, a couple of years ago, there was an initiative in the city of Ashland to do away with open carry and some other things, a pretty restrictive a gun bill, okay? And Pam decided that she wanted to set up a community discussion. So what she did was she announced these discussions and she invited both sides to come in. And her comment to me was this. She said, the pro-gun people came in and they were perfect gentlemen and ladies. They came there to discuss the issue. They were respectful, they stayed within the rules, and they listened to the other side and made their points, and it was a very, very good discussion. The anti-gun people came in, and it was their way or the highway. They were a bunch of jerks, and she said, I shut it down because I couldn't make this work because of the anti-gun people. Now, there's a story there for you also. You need to remember that again, it's who you're talking to and how you make your points. And that's where you take in all of the points that he made about you've got to have this arsenal of different points to make, because remember, different people are going to hear different things and different things move them, and you've got to keep that in your mind. So that would be my recommendation to you. And so anyways, we're really happy there at the Ashland Gun and Archery Club. It took us just over 7 years. It was just over $1 million was spent on that lawsuit. And I will tell you, it cost the city of Ashland, and I'm an Ashland taxpayer, it cost the city of Ashland almost $900,000.
Wow.
Okay.
There was a bunch of mitigation too, wetland mitigation.
That's it. That was not. It's not. That's not all legal fees. Our legal fees alone were $177,000. Okay. Now that was paid for by our insurance. But the simple fact of the matter is, guess what? Your liability insurance is now going to cost you because of this guy. You know, and he just the point we've made all along is this guy was able to drag this out. And at no point in 7+ years was the city of Ashland or the Ashland Gun Club found to be in violation of any environmental law or regulation. And yet, this is what happens when these guys get hold of you, and you've got to fight back, and you got to do the right thing. So I know darn good and well that one of his goals was, because that's a good military strategy, is you separate alliances, and he tried to drive a wedge between the gun club and the city of Ashland, and he wasn't able to do it. And we hung together, and we won in the end. So we're moving on. So that's my points. Any questions?
You know what I'd suggest? You got to take Pam Marshuting next. You know, I'll tell you. You take someone who is an anti-gunner, and you take them to a gun range, and they have fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you this. You know, yesterday, well, you know, where that article came from, I called Damian Mann. I decided that the media is going to get hold of this story, so I have a choice. I can either write the story or drive the train myself, or, you know, I can wait for them to write the story. So I invited Damian Mann out there yesterday with a photographer, and by the way, he shot a couple of different weapons, okay? And I'm standing there looking at it, I'm thinking to myself, my God, it's a reporter for the Mail Tribune, and he's standing there shooting a pistol. And then he shot two different pistols, and after he got done with one of the pistols, I looked at him and said, by the way, the pistol you just got done shooting was my wife's.
Very good.
So that worked out real nicely.
We need to boycott the Bella Fiore. Don't buy the wine.
We got to be careful on that one.
Yeah, I got to be careful about that. I try not to harm business people. I really do. I really do. But as an example, like with Dix and the various other things, hey, you more or less told me what you think about me, which makes it kind of hard to be forgiving. Colonel, we thank you so much for the update there. Colonel Dave Dodder. Questions in here. Steve, you want to say a couple of words here too? Steve the Marine, Dr. Stephen Greenleaf. He's both a, let's see, he has a JD and a psychiatry degree, correct?
Medical degree,
MD. So he could actually psychoanalyze himself, which is pretty cool. I like that. Or you could sue you could sue the other side of you if you were wrong, right?
I could. That lawsuit.
Yeah, go ahead, come over here, Steve.
Okay. That lawsuit against the Ashland gun range, what would be really helpful if Oregon had loser pays. In other words, Ashland wouldn't do it. The very first time I was a guest on the Bill Meyer program about 10, 12 years ago, that's what we talked about, loser pay for medical malpractice. Now we have something, it's really serendipity. This 20 round a month limit on ammunition. Most people, they correctly say that the cause of the American Revolution was taxation without representation. The real, what started the war was British attempts at gun control. And what they did was they marched up to Concord, not to take the guns of the Minutemen, because they knew they couldn't do that, but to take all of the ammunition, so to limit the effectiveness of the muskets. And that's what this 20-round deal is. Now, most important, I have about 20 or 30 articles or copies of something I wrote for the Bill Meyer Program a couple of years ago. It's a brief constitutional history of citizens bearing arms. And the important thing to remember that you'll get out of this is that U.S. constitutional history doesn't start in 1787 or 1776. It goes all the way back through England, Rome, and Greece. And you might ask, well, that history isn't law. But in judicial proceedings, it's called a history of something is called secondary authority. It can be used to interpret. What else was I going to say? Anyway, everybody that wants a copy of that essay, come on over and get it. I won't have nearly enough for everybody, but take my phone number and I will arrange for you to get a copy.
And Steve, if it's okay with you, I'll scan it and distribute it if you'd like.
Okay,
I'll scan it into a PDF, okay?
Yes.
And that will also be something that we include with the information packet that we end up sending out sometime, hopefully next week. Okay?
This will, but come and get a copy of those who are really interested. Get a hard copy, okay?
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve. All right. And before we get a few questions in here and talk, and then we'll wrap up and, you know, be able to get cracking and be united here for next week as we continue to talk about it. And I'll talk about this on the I need your email addresses, like I mentioned. It also costs us money, though, to rent the hall. And that's why we have the trash can. I'm not demanding any admission fee or anything like that, but if you could drop a buck or two, whatever you could feel that's affording, and that way we can keep doing this, if you don't mind. I'm talking about maybe doing another meeting here very soon, maybe getting a little closer to Josephine County, and maybe splitting the difference between Medford and Grants Pass so we can make it easy for everyone to get involved here, because we want to keep this up. It is so easy to think that I'm just by myself, or it's just the talk radio listeners, or, you know, there's no way we can win this. Yes, we can win this. We can win this. You have to float them. When I send that information out to you next week, get it to your friends. Get it to your own personal network. Spread it out like a vine, you know, just working its way through people's minds. So even if they weren't here tonight, and it's a darn impressive crowd, I'll tell you that for a Thursday night, but even if the people who aren't here, get it to those that couldn't make it, all right? Thank you very much. Donations, like I said, a buck or two if you can, and we'll pay for the hall, and we'll keep doing this, and make sure that we have your information one way or the other so we can get in contact next week, and we can start getting some comments in. Are you ready to make comments?
Yeah!
All right. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. Thank you very much for coming tonight. Wonderful time. All right?